Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3TA.
Spotted Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that crossfire, boys. Right now, I feel like I take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Echo Base. This is number 97. We're recording this on May 23rd, 2017, just 2 days before the 40th anniversary, official 40th anniversary of Star Wars. So we are all very excited to be back here. With me tonight are my two co-hosts. I have Chris with me. Chris, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. And Tim, how are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. I just crawled out of my dead tauntaun, a little stinky, but otherwise doing fine.
They keep you warm, though. You know.
Absolutely.
Very good. Very good. So we are here to, you know, bring in and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. It does boggle my mind that it's been 40 years. it doesn't seem that way to me. And it also, because the movie still seems relevant and fresh almost. I mean, most movies that are 4 years old do not age that well. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. We want to go to a little bit of news first. A couple comics that were announced recently. We have a Star Wars Rogue One comic. It's being a one-shot for Cassian and K2SO. Which should be really fun. It's going to talk about some of their origins of the two characters, which I think is going to be fascinating. I'd love to know how Cassian came about capturing and using K2SO and what that process was like. K2SO has got to be one of my favorite characters of the newer characters in Star Wars. What about you guys? You guys really like K2SO, or is it just me?
I like him.
He's kind of replaced.
That's all we get, Chris?
Yeah, I mean,
that's good character.
He's funny. It's Alan Tudyk. I mean,
very true. No, I really like K2SO. I think he's a great character. I do love the depth that Alan Tudyk brought to him. I think he's a lot of fun. With this comic, I think that even though in the text that we got, the description that we got of this, it says that it's the origin of the characters. I think it's more geared toward exactly what you said, Lou, that it is an origin of how the characters came together. I don't think it gets into like an origin story of Cassian and, you know, watching K2SO be manufactured and then, you know, somewhere later down the road they link up.
This to me, this makes sense to be the origin of the characters as a pair because they are a pair. I mean, I don't think we're going to see solo missions for K2SO anytime soon.
Right.
But, I think that's going to be exciting because, I mean, I always want to know a little bit about what happened before the scene starts or a little bit about what happened with the characters before they became what we saw on screen.
Absolutely.
The background just makes it feel more full to me. I mean, I don't know. I've never minded to go back into a story and get a little bit of detail. Especially if it makes the current stuff more relevant, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And especially the two of them, they have a very unique relationship that obviously has some depth to it. They each know each other's idiosyncrasies and intent when they say and do different things that then seems almost intrusive, particularly when you know, Jin, after getting grilled on Yavin, and they decide that they're going to go back out together, and Jin first, you know, Jin gets back on the ship, and she encounters K2SO again and has this dialogue with them, and then Cassian comes in. It almost feels like Jin is intruding on this dynamic that the two of them have. So it's just really cool. And yeah, I'm excited to see this background between the two.
So we're also getting, in August, around the same time we're getting this, Cassian and K2SO one shot, we're getting a five issue miniseries of, thank you, Star Wars Jedi of the Republic for Mace Windu. I'm less excited about this one.
Okay, so I want to say something.
Please.
I'm glad that this is a prequel era comic, but why does it have to be at the Clone Wars? Why can't it be in between episodes 1 and 2? We literally have no content there.
Yeah.
We have an entire series about the Clone Wars. We have two movies that cover it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the exciting part, though. I mean, probably nothing happens between.
Mace might be going on some really great adventures.
Well, he might be, but I mean, come on. All the action's happening in Clone Wars. I mean.
But here's the thing. We've been talking about the Clone Wars now for 15 years. Can we just, like, what else is there to tell? He's not going to die in the comic. He's not going to lose an arm.
When you say it like that, it makes me feel really sad now. It's like, well, come on, you're right, Chris. It's like, yeah, let's get off this. Let's go somewhere else. But
I have a bigger gripe about it than just that.
Okay.
Like, I wouldn't mind, you know, this coming out, but why does it have to be a 5-issue miniseries? Why can't we get more one-shots? Or why can't we just combine all 5 issues into a graphic novel and sell it that way?
Well, they will do that later to make more money.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, you know, that'll come out a year from now or something.
Because that's probably what I'm going to buy.
Because
I probably won't do the individual ones. I'll probably end up getting the compendium in the end, so...
Yeah, and you're not the only one, Tim. I know a ton of people who would love to read the comics right now, but they can't because they'll just end up buying the trade later, and then they'll have single issues that just sit and... You know,
right, they collect dust, or they get given away to somebody. Right,
mm-hmm.
That's what I did with Lando. That's what I did with Vader. Although Vader was actually a series of trades, just because there were so many issues. But mm-hmm.
How would you guys feel if Star Wars eventually, or even just comics in general, went to that format?
Especially Star Wars.
Like get away from this weekly release schedule of certain series and just like you can have maybe like one or two like really long ongoings like the current Star Wars comic, but if it's just like a focusing on a character, or if it's 5 issues or even 10 issues, just like wait and release it all at once.
Yeah, but then it'd be long gaps between issues coming out. I mean. I think some people do really like the fact that you get a monthly story, you know, the monthly installment for this ongoing series.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just bugs me that because I have a ton of Star Wars comics in my closet that I got for probably the first year or so that they were coming out. And I didn't read any, like, I read most of them, but I saw, like, half that, probably almost half that I need to read eventually.
See, and I just have a bunch of digital files that are being read or waiting to be read.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the paper clogging up the closet.
There is also an affordability issue. You know, if people are buying individual comics, they're basically just, you know, paying on installments. Mm-hmm. To pick up an individual comic rather than spending a lot more money in buying a trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does it come out to be if you buy them individually or buy the trade? Is it same price usually, or is a trade a bargain because you're getting them all at once?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
Okay. I didn't pay attention.
I don't pay attention. I mean, and the thing is, I'm sure that folks who buy a lot of comics, this could make a difference to them. Younger comic readers, you know, who obviously have very limited funds, this can also make a big difference to them also.
And then the people that collect the covers, too, they're going to be upset. They like all the cover variants. And individual comics have, you know, more pizzazz when you look at the cover of each one individually, I suppose.
True.
I mean, there's pluses and minuses to it. I think you're right, Chris. It's, you know, I would rather have them in a collection if I was collecting the hard copies. As a digital reader, I like it monthly because it's easier to keep up with it. It's, I look forward to a monthly segment getting downloaded into my phone or into my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that makes me happy.
I actually have an old trade paperback here of Star Wars collection. It's when Dark Horse had it, but it was $24.95.
So okay.
I imagine it's somewhere around there.
Yeah. But I guess it would make, you know, how many comics it covered and, you know, what's pressure in individual comics these days.
Right. Yeah.
For this particular series with Mace, and I agree with you, Chris, that we have had a lot of Clone Wars content. The one that seems a little more interesting about this one is that they specify that it very early into the Clone War, so we're kind of seeing not only the integration of the Clone Army into the Republic and the role of the Jedi. But they do kind of allude to, in their description here, it says the Jedi must make peace with their new role or be lost to the violence around them. And I think that there's a lot of depth to that when you consider the concept of the Jedi as peacemakers. And well, sometimes they would go on missions even well before the Clone Wars ever occurred, you know, where they did act in a possibly military or enforcement type of fashion, with the end goal being peace. But in this case, I mean, they are truly leading military forces, which is a new role for them. And so I think it can explore maybe some different avenues in this. It would be nice to see something in that period between episode one and episode two. There's a number of years there that are really greatly unexplored, especially now since they have you know, basically rebooted the books. And even when the old EU was around, there weren't many books that explored between those two films. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have some plans for it. Who knows?
See, now, I have less of an issue with, you know, the comics and how they're being released like Chris does. I have more of an issue with the fact that, why is it Mace Windu? I mean, is it Mace Windu just because of who played him in the movies and that's why there's you know, people hankering for this? Or is it that much of an interesting character? There's a lot of other members of the council that we don't have books on or stories on.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep thinking it's back to because, you know, Sam Jackson plays him and it's a character people are interested in. When, you know, he's not any more interesting than, you know, Sissy Tin or somebody else. I mean, to me, it just seems like, I don't know, I could care less about Mace Windu, personally.
I like Mace Windu. I'm a huge fan of Sam Jackson. I've mentioned this in other podcasts with you guys. Huge fan. So, you know, certainly things with Mace Windu, I do like the character because of Samuel Jackson. But also what I've seen of the character and his portrayal of the character. I mean, he is a master. He is on the council. He seems to... He's obviously highly respected. He's a little more outspoken than some of the other masters are. And he's a little more brooding. He's a little more thoughtful with things. And obviously he led the attack against Palpatine, which was also pretty meaningful. That meant something. So I do like the character. Yeah, I would love to see something with Ki-Adi-Mundi or Plo Koon. Mm-hmm. In particular, I mean, those are, I think, two of my other favorite masters from this particular time period. Maybe we'll see more.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, diss Sam Jackson. It's just, you know, there's all this talk about Mace Windu, and it's like, well, you know, why is he so popular, I guess? But, okay, and one last little bit of news, which isn't really news. It's more of a speculation and wishful thinking on my part. But Mel Brooks has discussed recently that Spaceballs 2 could happen with the recent, you know, thrusting of Star Wars back onto the forefront of, you know, everybody's minds. We're getting the ability that maybe we'll see the quest for more money. I'd be real happy to see this because I loved Spaceballs, and I think Mel Brooks is one of Mel Brooks' best movies. Doing that all over again would be, you know, challenging for him, but would be a lot of fun for us.
If he doesn't title it "The Quest for More Money," I will be highly disappointed.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, they said that was the name of the movie in the first one.
Exactly. You know? They have to make good on it. I would love to. Well, I mean, it's Mel Brooks, so he just the stuff he comes up with is absolutely incredible and epic. I can't even imagine what type of storyline, you know, he would try to follow with it. I mean, Mel Brooks doing some type of a parody of, I'll say it because I think I have to mention this character's name in every single episode of Echo Base, Jar Jar.
Oh, God.
Mel Brooks doing a parody of a character that is virtually a parody of himself. I mean, that's almost mind-blowing. So let's just sit and consider that for a moment.
No, let's not. Chris, didn't we say we weren't going to have him on anymore? Didn't we?
Yeah,
say
that last time? I mean, we did say that last episode was, you know, I don't, the only one.
Why? Okay, well, we'll
figure you're, out you're what, stuck but, with me now, guys. Sorry.
Let's figure out what went wrong there, I guess. But okay.
of course, how he should have started off this podcast was Misa back.
Oh boy. Oh, well, let's see. Everything's got a dark side to it, I guess. well, seeing how this is the 40th anniversary of Star Wars, we figured we would have our discussion this week kind of based on that itself. Everything's been kind of leading up towards this. We had, you know, Star Wars Day on May the 4th this month, and that was kind of muted because everybody's kind of waiting to see what was going to happen for the 40th anniversary. As well. So we're kind of getting 2 days in the month of May this year that are celebrating Star Wars and kind of leading towards that. Any initial thoughts on the 40th anniversary from you guys?
Not really.
Wow. Chris, hold back that enthusiasm.
Well, you know, I think it's cool. I agree with you, Lou, that it doesn't feel like it's been 40 years. I mean, 40 years is quite a while. It's cool to see that we have a variety of, you know, vendors and toy producers and producers of other licensed goods who are doing some 40th anniversary promotions. You know, if you haven't been aware of any, you know, quick Google search, you'll dig up plenty of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. I've, you know, seen emails. I've had the pop-ups. I've had things on Twitter, all sorts of stuff. You know, we've seen a lot and covered a lot over these last 40 years, and it really has been really incredible. And it's been, you know, it's funny. I want to say life-changing, but I've been a fan of Star Wars for the vast majority of my life. So I don't know that it's been life-changing or life-altering because it's been a part of my life. And I think the same goes for you guys and for a lot of other people out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, like for Tim, you know, for Tim, you and I, you know, we're the older generation, and it's been around since we were kids. For Chris's generation, it's been around his whole life.
Yeah.
And he probably has a different take on it than we do because, you know, there was a drought of stuff, and then we got a lot more stuff coming back on that. I'd like to get Chris's thoughts on that as well, too. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I was eight when it came out, eight or nine, I guess. And, you know, it's like, wow, you know, it's like, I don't remember a life before Star Wars, truthfully, because I don't really remember my early childhood that much or anything that was like, wow, that's really impressive. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, vendors with stuff to sell, and I'm thinking back, it's like, you know, especially action figures. I mean, you know, there weren't many movies before this that had as much of an impact on action figures as Star Wars did.
Yeah.
So you think about, you know, what movie from before Star Wars has stuff that's still in the stores selling action figure wise, or at least, you know, trinket wise? I can't really think of many.
And how insanely brilliant of it was it of George Lucas to retain licensing rights?
Yeah.
At that time. I mean, the amount of...
Yeah, sure, take it. Go ahead.
Yeah. The amount of insight he had, I'm pretty sure he must have had a time machine to actually see what was going to happen with all this stuff, because that was absolutely part of the biggest haul in history. Mm-hmm. So... That was certainly a big part of it. Now, Lou, I got to ask you. So you said you were eight when Star Wars first came out. I'm actually just a few months younger than Star Wars. So when the first film came out, I did not exist. You were eight. Did you go see it in the theater? Do you remember seeing it? Do you know if you did or not?
I do. I remember seeing it in the theater. I remember the only recollection I have of the movie really vividly is thinking the stormtroopers were robots.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and as that was my first, you know, I was nine. I mean, you know, what do I know about stuff? And, but yeah, I remember seeing it in the theater. I remember being just in awe over, you know, Luke swinging across the chasm and so forth and holding Princess Leia. I was like, wow, that's really awesome. I was really excited about that. And you know, of course, afterward, you know, I had the toys and you'd play Star Wars out in the backyard and stuff.
Yep.
And yeah, it was amazing. I remember getting the two, you know, LP album of the soundtrack.
Yep.
I remember playing that on my little record player in my bedroom, you know, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is one of my first movie theater experiences that I remember vividly. So, cool.
Very cool. I'm jealous. I'm really jealous.
But yeah, that, you know, that's back in the time when, you know, a movie comes out on the big screen and you wouldn't see it at home for years.
Years, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it wasn't until the TV rights came out and, you know, I don't know how long after Star Wars released in theaters that we got it on television. But, you know, I'm dating myself here that, you know, VCRs weren't invented back then. And, you know, nobody had anything to record it with or watch it with besides, you know, seeing it in the theater. So it was years before I could see it again.
Yeah. Oh, I remember as a kid basically recording them with the VCR, recording the movies with the VCR off of TV, and just playing those tapes over and over and over and over again. so many times. And certainly Empire Strikes Back was the one that stuck out to me the most. I still would have been, I would have been five. I don't think I saw Empire in the theater. But I do remember it playing on TV. And then, and I obviously also remember the first one playing on TV. I still don't even think that I saw Jedi in the theater. Yeah. I was just a huge fan of what I saw on TV. And then when they came out with the special editions that they re-released in the theaters, I absolutely saw all of those in the theater, and those I remember very vividly. That was a big deal.
I remember seeing the trailers for that when they first talked about how it's coming back to the big screen, and they had that you know teaser where they had that little TV screen in the middle of the big movie theater, and it's like, for a generation, this is how fans were able to see the movie, and that's, you know, you miss the big picture, and then the, you know, the X-Wing comes flying out of the television onto the big screen. It's like, wow, you know, it's amazing. And you think about it, it's like, you know, if you hadn't seen it on the big screen in so long, and I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, so, you know, to me it was almost brand new again on the screen when they had the special editions released.
Oh, sure. Now, Chris, obviously you weren't around for the original trilogy. What was the first Star Wars film that you saw?
Well, the first one that I saw was A New Hope in like 96, 97-ish. Okay. It was on TV. And the funny thing is that for the longest time, I never got to see the beginning of the movie. It was always
really?
After, yeah, it was always when they were on the Death Star. Near the end, well, this probably the middle of the film, they'd get off of the Death Star and then go to the Yavin base and attack and whatnot. That was like the only part I ever saw because it would show up on like Saturday or Sunday mornings at like 7 o'clock on the Superstation channel. And I would wake up and I would see it on and I would watch it, but I, you know, I didn't have the tape of it. Because it was pre-special edition, I know.
Okay.
And I think they had like those, that box set was all that was out. Yep. The pre-special edition box set. And then I didn't have any of those. I actually didn't get a copy of Star Wars until probably there was the Star Wars Trilogy Special Edition box set that I got for Christmas or something one year. It was before The Phantom Menace came out. I had that. I didn't watch them. I did watch episode 4, but I didn't watch 5 or 6 probably until like 2001. But I vividly remember watching The Phantom Menace in theaters. Cause I like watch it and I loved it. And when it got to the part where, there was the lightsaber battle between, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Darth Maul, I would shut my eyes because it was scary.
Cool.
That's great. That's great.
And then after that, I watched The Phantom Menace over and over and over and over again when I got it on VHS. And then finally, somehow, I know it was pre-Attack of the Clones. I think, like I said earlier, 2001, around that time, my dad and I were talking, and he was like, wait a minute, you've never actually watched episodes 5 and 6 that you own? And I said, no, I was watching episode 1. He's like, we're changing that. So, like, literally, we took a weekend, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and sat down and watched 4, 5, and 6.
Nice. Awesome.
All on those nights, and it was really memorable. I remember, cause I didn't know what Darth Vader looked like under his helmet, and that part scared me to death. And I remember, cause we were watching it, that night, and that afternoon I was at my grandma's house, and I was on the computer, and I was like, I really want to know what Darth Vader looks like under his helmet before I watch it, because otherwise I'll just end up like covering my eyes or something, cause I was scared. And, cause I was only like 9 at the time, I think. So, I looked up, Darth Vader, Anakin, or something like that. And I saw him as the Force Ghost. And I was like, and you know, I've never seen Return of the Jedi. So I was like, oh, well, that must be him. And it wasn't, it was actually like, it wasn't him from the, movie. I think it was his face as like an action figure or like a promo still or something. It was Sebastian Shaw. And I was like, oh, so he's just some old guy under there. So I didn't worry about it. Well, then when I watched that movie later that night, you know, I still kind of had like my hands over my face with an eye peeking out of my fingers. And when he took the mask off, I was like, wow, that's not what I was expecting.
That's cool. That's cool. Nice. The thing that I think scared me the most when I was a kid was toward the end of Empire, when Luke and Vader were fighting, and Vader was using the Force to rip things off of the walls and things that were on the floor and that kind of stuff, and just, you know, hurling those things at Luke with the Force. And as a kid, that terrified me. And it was like, because it just like viscerally brought this emotion out of me of how unfair of a fight that was. And the scoring in the background for it just like continued to emphasize that emotion. You know, and Luke is hurt and he's just kind of swinging wildly at these things. It just like, desperate and oh yeah, that part really got me as a kid. That part really got me, scared the hell out of me.
You know, speaking of Empire, I'd like to know, Lou, I assume that you saw Empire in theaters.
I did, yes.
Okay. I always like to know, what was people's reaction to finding out that Vader was Luke's father? Because I don't, even though I saw 4, and then I saw 1. Like, somehow I just found out that, like,
really? Okay.
It was, like, ingrained in my head. I never, like, I don't remember anyone ever telling me. I knew it before the movie, before I eventually saw episode 5. Yeah, I didn't know who, well, like, I feel was, like it was just something I was born knowing.
Okay, I mean, I was told before the movie that there was going to be a twist. And, you know, I mean, I'm only a couple years older than I was when I saw the first one, so I was still a kid, but You know, I didn't know what that meant. And I remember when they revealed that, I was like in disbelief. I was like, no, that can't be right. They messed something up, you know. It was like, yeah, I had no idea that was coming, and it was just, it shattered my mind, really. It, you know, my entire viewpoint of the movie changed at that point. That I'm like, oh, this is wrong. That can't be right, you know. and I'm wondering how, you know, if those movies were released today, would that have the same reaction people would have to it? You know, in the way we get big reveals today is a lot different than we had big reveals back then. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that was my reaction. And I don't remember the audience reaction, but that was my reaction.
Tim, do you remember when you found out?
I really don't. And I think it was just because I was so young watching the films. I watched them, and I picked up, I think, on a lot of the visuals first. You know, it was cool in the space battle thing and these starfighters and the lightsabers and the blasters and all that. So once I got to the age where I really started, I think, to comprehend the events that were transpiring in the films, I obviously already knew that Vader was Luke's father, and so it was never really something that like struck me. So I don't remember having that big surprise reaction to it, just because I had watched them so many times being younger, and like I said, really paying more attention to the visuals and the special effects more than anything else. Mm-hmm. When I first saw them.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to think about that. You know, nowadays, I mean, there are obviously still a lot of people that have never seen Star Wars and don't know the reveal, but it's such a common thing that, especially in this new age of Star Wars, where it's a pretty common thing between just the general public of, like if you say, how is Darth Vader related to Luke Skywalker?
Yeah.
I mean, it's common knowledge, and it's just a weird phenomenon. I mean, I remember growing up, first of all, I was really taken aback when I saw Empire for the first time and Luke fought Vader in the cave on Dagobah, and he cut off his head and the mask blew up and it was Luke's face. I was like, is that what Anakin looked like? Were they twins?
Right.
Or, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, like sure. Yep.
Like, I thought that, like, Vader was lying and that it was a, you know, a brother or something. But,
Yeah, I must say, when I was a kid and saw that scene, I had no idea what was going on. You know, why is Luke's face? I didn't know. Too young to understand, I guess, and just glossed over it. Mm-hmm. But
my favorite thing, though, will always be in between episodes 1 and 2, not really up until 3, but like I kind of had an aha moment in between the release of 2 and 3. I had no idea who Darth Sidious was. Like, I would buy the action figure. I had the action figure, and I would try to rip his hood off. I tried to rip his hood off because I wanted to see what his face looked like. And, you know, it didn't click that Darth Sidious and, again, I'd never seen the 6th movie, so I didn't know who the Emperor was.
Okay, yeah, right, sure.
So sure. I was like, who is that guy? What does he look like? And it never clicked with me that Sidious and Palpatine have the same actors either, so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking in The Phantom Menace, too, because they had the same person, so.
You know, that's something that's always kind of made me wonder, too, about the order you see the movies in. And there's been a lot of discussion about what order you should watch them in. But, you know, people that started with episode 1 and gone through the thing sequentially versus going from, you know, 4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3, you get a different story. There's different reveals.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, you never could do it, but I would have liked to have been able to experience it the other way as well, too.
My former roommate, his girlfriend had never seen the movies before, and he knew that I was a big Star Wars fan, And he said, hey, she knows nothing about the movies. She doesn't even know about Darth Vader. What order should I let her watch them in? And I said, well, if she knows, doesn't know about Darth Vader, that's the big surprise. So I said, do start with four and do four and five. And then after you watch five, don't go to six yet. Go back and watch one, two, and three, then watch six. Because you still kind of don't know who the, you know, like you think the Emperor, and because you just see his face in five. So, you know, if you see him in one, you're like, oh, well, that's just Darth, the Emperor from five. Like, it's not Palpatine. So when she got to episode three, I remember being in the room, and she didn't know that Luke and Leia were a brother and sister either. When Padme had the twins and one is like Luke, she's like, oh, okay. And then, you know, she sees the girl and they're like Leia, she like her jaw dropped. And you know, that's a reveal that's in episode three. But by the time, you know, we saw it, you know, it was common knowledge, but if you're watching it in the 4, 5, 1, 2, 3 or the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 order, then you don't like that. You still experience that reveal.
Yeah, the reveal doesn't have the emotional impact to the viewer.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
if they do it in episodic order.
Yeah, so that's the way that I always tell people to watch it. Even if they know about Darth Vader already, like still do the 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, or even if you really want to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's, you know, every viewing order has its pros and cons, but
yeah.
I just feel like that is the best one to do because you get all the surprises and you don't really ruin anything.
Here's a question. Would you guys, even though it doesn't involve any of our main characters, would you guys put Rogue One into the middle of that viewing order, or would you hold it as a separate film outside of that series?
That's a good question. I think I'd probably put it into the story, mm-hmm. you know, because it leads right into A New Hope, you know, purposely done very well. Yeah. I think it deserves to be part of that order. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. If someone said, hey, I don't want to watch, you know, any spinoff movies, I don't care, I just want to see the main trilogy, it's like, okay. But because it's not really required viewing.
True.
But
it's so much value. Yeah.
It is. But
I mean, it ties in so directly. I mean, yeah. mm-hmm. almost down to the minute, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and I don't think it would be added in.
Yeah. And if otherwise you would have said, start with episode four, would you now say start with Rogue One and then lead into episode four?
See, that's tough because I don't think Rogue One is as good of an entry movie into the franchise as A New Hope is. I mean, you know, any order I look at doing, I think episode four is the start of how you'd want to view it. And adding Rogue One into it before that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I just said I wanted a part of that order, but yeah, it doesn't work as the entry movie. It's not as catching. It's not as grabbing as A New Hope is.
I agree.
True.
I think it's a better movie.
If you watch it 1 through 6, then I'd say include it. But if mm-hmm. you're going in a starting with 4 order, even if you do 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3. Don't like, I wouldn't start with Rogue One just because like Lou said, it's very like, I feel like to fully appreciate Rogue One, you kind of have to have a general idea of what Star Wars is and what the universe is.
Yeah, like, I think so too.
Yeah. It is at its core is a sci-fi military war movie, but to fully appreciate it, I think you need to see you need to know about Star Wars, because otherwise, like, Darth Vader isn't menacing. He's menacing, but he's not as menacing.
Right.
You know, you don't have the connections to any of these ships or, mm-hmm. or, you know, the character. I mean, the characters aren't part of the main saga, but I think having a prior knowledge of Star Wars helps when it comes to Rogue One. But Rogue One is also the type of movie that you'd show it to a fan of action war movies, and they would probably like it.
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. It's interesting. I mean, you know, obviously we have a particular bias because we have seen all the films and trying to figure out what this order is. And I think it's a little different for everyone. And I know that folks, you know, obviously prior to Rogue One had talked about, hey, what's the best order to watch the movies. And then when Rogue One came in, you know, there were some opinions on that also. And I think very few people, very few positioned Rogue One as that first film to watch. But I mean, just, and while I don't disagree with what you guys are saying about it, not being that great of an introductory film to the Star Wars universe, there is so much meaning and relevance directly. And obviously we know minutes directly, into A New Hope, that it's like, if A New Hope is the door at the end of the hallway, Rogue One is the hallway that you're walking down. And it feels to me, I mean, obviously, yeah, sure, you could close your eyes, I guess, and get down that hallway and then open them when you open that door to get to A New Hope. But boy, you're missing a lot of the scenery if you're not watching things as you're walking down that hallway. And there's just so much, it seems to add to me so much more power and urgency. And even though, you know, hey, all of us have seen A New Hope dozens, hundreds of times. And once we saw Rogue One, how much of just those first 5 or 10 minutes of A New Hope changed for us and had such a different meaning? I know they did for me. It made me look at things so differently.
You're absolutely right. It really did.
I think it adds a lot. Listeners, give us feedback on that. Twitter, Facebook, Slack people, whatever. Give us feedback. Send us emails on this. Give us your thoughts and your opinions on what order that for new viewers should watch the films. Would you or would you not include Rogue One, and how? Let us know.
Yeah, I think the key point there, Tim, is would you include Rogue One or not? I mean, I think we've kind of beat that horse of the, you know, what order to watch them in quite a bit, and so have everybody else on the internet. But you know, the introduction of Rogue One brings up a new question. Do you add it in? Do you keep it separate? Do you want to play it with them after they're done? You know, yeah. I'd like to hear that from our listeners.
Absolutely. We've strayed a little bit from our 40th anniversary discussion, though.
We have, but this is all celebrating Star Wars, so we can do that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Was there anything else about Star Wars in general over the last 40 years that is, you know, anything that's changed in your life that's maybe given you things that you didn't think you were going to get? I mean, I know for me personally, I mean, it's impacted me as far as, you know, this podcast, the people I've met, the friends I've talked with, the places I've been to. You know, those are all things that, you know, I owe a lot to Star Wars for. Going to celebrations, meeting people, seeing old friends, you know, going on the Star Wars cruise. These are things that I would have never done without Star Wars itself. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, I would say all those things for me except the Star Wars cruise, because none of us got to go on the Star Wars cruise.
Still can.
But on top of that, I would also say that Star Wars has gotten me through periods of my life where I needed – Star Wars almost became therapy for me in a way. You know, just like even just simply having – you know, I'm having a bad day or a bad few days. To throw in a Star Wars movie and just to kind of re-immerse myself in that, or to read a good Star Wars book, something like that has always been a huge help to me. They have always been go-to movies, and go-to novels, that have really just kind of perked me up again. You know, it's a little bit of an escape, but it also helps me come back to real life with a better mindset.
Yeah. Nice. I know for me, I mean, obviously Star Wars has been a big part of my life. But probably the best credit that I can give it is, I mean, I've met some incredible people because of Star Wars, and, you know, both online and off. Some of my best friends growing up were because I liked Star Wars. I remember in middle school, I was one of the few kids that liked Star Wars in my grade. So it was me and, you know, a few other people, a few other boys my age that I hung out with every day. And most of them I don't keep regular contact with anymore, because we don't live in the same area. One of the guys, which is probably one of my closest friends, I still keep in touch with him. I actually saw him last week because we live in the same town right now. But I don't know. It's just Star Wars is such a, was such a huge part of my childhood, and just to see it continue, be a, for the most part, positive thing for me in my young adult years. You know, that's just it's mind blowing to think that something that was so relevant, you know, as far back as almost 20 years now, is just incredible to me. Plus, you know, I do podcasts, which is has helped me tremendously, you know, with anxiety and depression and stuff like that. So, yeah. Can't get much better than that, I'd say.
No, I don't think you can. I think you're absolutely right. That does kind of sum up the highest level of what this has done for us, you know, when you come right down to it. Mm-hmm. One last question about the anniversary before we move on and kind of wrap the show up. You know, 40 years is a long time, and it's impressive it's lasted. And I think it has – I think it's going to be around for a little while longer. What do you think we're going to get out of the next 40 years of Star Wars?
I'm going to let Tim take this one first.
Gee, thanks, Chris.
Make the new guy do it.
Oh, gosh. Well, obviously, we know that Disney and Lucasfilm have a plan going out for the next several years, at least, giving us a film a year. I'm hopeful that we will see... I'd like to see another trilogy beyond the sequel trilogy. I don't know what I want that to be. It might be an unpopular opinion, but I'm kind of done with the Skywalkers. I'm a big fan. Don't get me wrong there. But we will have seen effectively 9 films of them. And I think it's time to find some other lead characters in a family that has nothing whatsoever to do with the Skywalkers. I think we can still maybe even continue a Jedi related saga. And that would be great. I think obviously over the, you know, in the future and potentially for the next 40 years, the films are still the centerpiece. I still want us to have books and comics and animated series, hopefully some live action TV series, and all the other things that go with it, celebrations and cruises and everything else. But the movies still need to be the centerpiece of all this. I'd like to see the movies continue to be cutting edge. One thing that we didn't mention in our discussion of what's happened in the past for the last 40 years has been all the innovation that has come from the Star Wars films and the impact that they have had on all of cinema ever since the mm-hmm. first Star Wars movie was released. I mean, just everything.
There's so many groundbreaking aspects of it. You're right.
Exactly. Exactly. You
know, so, ILM was founded because they had to do something to create the special effects for Star Wars. You know,
yes. I mean, yeah, exactly.
There model are makers that are, you know, took things to a new height, and every movie is pushing that limit to the next step and the next step in the evolution. Although when you do watch the behind the scenes stuff of Rogue One and you hear them talking about, you know, K2SO, and when he wasn't walking on the stilts and had to have the head on a pole above his out of a backpack, he's like, and this is ILM making this. You know, I
had a laugh. Exactly.
This is high tech stuff. It's a plastic thing with a picture of it. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, we have so many things to point back to Star Wars of where this technology came from. You know, just the way they do movies today has been impacted by this movie franchise dramatically.
Yeah.
I mean, even down to the point of them not getting credits rolling in the front of the movie. I mean, that was a huge thing that he got fined for, wasn't it? Didn't he get fined for that?
I believe they still pay fines for it. I think that's still a requirement of somebody.
You know, that was down to just his vision of, I don't want to see this before the movie. And, you know.
Right.
So many things changed.
So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I guess in short here, at least on my thoughts, I want to see continued momentum. I want to see groundbreaking things, not only in the forefront of what we see in these films, but also in the background, in how they make the films. I want them to still be production-wise cutting edge. I want to see the Star Wars franchise continue to be known for quality and innovation, because I think those are some of their biggest hallmarks.
Tim,
any thoughts from you, Chris?
I think you really nailed it there. And you know, I feel like that's something that is vastly underrated when it comes to Star Wars, or at least ignored by the fandom at large, because you know, everyone's asking for more movies and more books and more TV things. And, you know, if you look back pre The Force Awakens, and I'm including Clone Wars in this, with the original trilogy, obviously that was hugely innovative. With the prequels, I mean, there was people had been more prone to like the action content and explosions and whatnot. So, you know, what might have been cool looking in 77 wasn't as cool in 99, but you still with the prequels, each one, despite its flaws, when it came to making it, like, you know, the, in my opinion, overuse of computer technology with some things, that's still being innovative. You know, that's one reason why we have the special editions, is because George Lucas wanted to, you know, fulfill his vision of what he wanted the world to look like. And even with Clone Wars, I mean, yeah, the Clone Wars animated movie didn't do too hot, but if that's probably just because it was animated. But look at the series. The Clone Wars series is an entire generation Star Wars. Like that is their entry point for so many people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether or not you like it, that doesn't matter. It just matters that it was important to people. And, you know, you don't see shows really like that on TV that much. I mean, you do every now and then, but I'd argue that even that in itself was innovative. And I hope that as Star Wars continues, it always finds a way to be a standout. I mean, we were talking on the last episode of Random Chatter about how the new Star Trek trailer, I mean, it looks good, but it doesn't really stand out from anything. And that's something that I hope Star Wars doesn't ever, you know, become guilty of doing, because if it does, we might eventually get to the point where, like, well, you know, let's just put it on the shelf for a few years and let it set for a while, because, you know, we're just rehashing same techniques and same stories, and it's not fresh anymore. So, I have hope for Star Wars, though. I think Disney, you know, Disney has, you know, from when, as far back as the early 1900s, when they were putting out, you know, their short cartoons, and then, you know, mid 1900s when you had the, all of those wonderful films coming out, even to as something as large scale as Disneyland and Disney World, they are the perfect brand to keep that train going. And, as long as they don't lose sight of it, I mean, I think we'll be, I think it's in good hands, and that we don't have really anything to worry about, at least for the foreseeable future. Maybe in like another 40 years, but who knows?
Well, I think you guys put a good spin on that 40-year thing. I think you're right. As long as they stay kind of cutting edge and fresh, I think we're in good hands, you know, if they do that. And hopefully there'll be some other people sitting around microphones talking about Star Wars in 40 years. So I'm sure we'll be long since stopped doing this ourselves, but I don't think I quite have the same staying power that Star Wars does.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I will, in like 40 years, I'll only be like, what, 65? So I can still do it.
You can. You can. I'll be 88, so I'll be doing it from the nursing home. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, let's see.
Maybe we'll have adjoining rooms.
We'll have the random chatter wing of the nursing home. We can all be living there together.
Now that would be cool.
Do we have to invite Derek?
Yeah, I think we have to. We can make sure he's got a private room, though. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, one last thing on 40th anniversary. Vanity Fair did a reveal of their covers for next month. And having four special covers, kind of reflecting on The Last Jedi, but I think in terms of celebrating the 40th anniversary as well, too. Did you guys have a chance to look at these covers?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Andy Leibovitz did the photography for them. They are just amazing. So you know, go to vanityfair.com. I think Jedi News has them online as well, too. The covers, basically, they have I think the one that I like the most is going to be the one of General Organa. You know, Carrie Fisher's cover is just looks amazing, and I think it's a nice tribute to her. Mm-hmm. But they also do have, let's see, we have the cover with Luke and Rey, which looks pretty cool, mm-hmm. in their garb from her training, evidently. And we have the villains. We do have Kylo and Phasma and Hux. And then we do have the rebels as well, too. We have Poe, Finn, and I don't know who the third person is. I can't remember her name. She's one of the new characters, one of the new rebels in the upcoming
Rose. Jedi. Rose Tico.
There you go.
Can I just say, looking at the cover for Rey and Luke, man, Luke has seen better days.
He's old. He spent the last 30 years on Iowa by himself.
I love the way that he looks. Cause, you know, I feel like that's something that we would never have expected Luke to be, because we're seeing, we're all used to the expanded universe books where he's not, mm-hmm. you know, an old guy, or if he is, he's very kempt up, but.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
See, I really like this because to me it throws back to Obi-Wan.
Yeah,
you know, it has that same feel to it. He's taken on the role of his master. I really love the look that Luke brings to this role at this point. I'm not sure he likes the beard and stuff, but personally, but I think it's just an amazing imagery
Yeah,
and it really works for him. Yeah.
One thing that's been pointed out a bit on Twitter that I saw this afternoon, if you zoom in on this particular cover, you'll notice that Luke actually has a gloved hand. Whereas at the end of The Force Awakens, we saw that it was the, you know, metal cybernetic hand, and he apparently threw a glove on it. And we did see an image of a gloved hand, same looking glove, in the new trailer,
right,
for this film. So that kind of confirms, apparently, or close enough, that gloved hand was, in fact, Luke's.
Well, you know, when he's alone on the island by himself, he didn't need to, you know, cover it up. He didn't feel self-conscious about it. You know, Ray gets it. Oh, God, I got to put the glove back on, you know.
Exactly. But, yeah, cool covers. You guys know when they come out on the newsstands?
I don't know on newsstands. I know it's next month's issue, summer.
Oh, okay.
I don't know when the date is.
All right, so I have to keep an eye out for those.
Yeah, because I'll definitely want to add those to my collection. Well, unless you guys have anything else to add in, I think that's all we have for this episode. Any last minute additions, folks?
I don't think so.
No.
I think we had a great discussion.
I enjoyed it. Hey, talking about 40 years with the Star Wars is always fun. So, in that same vein, if you want to continue this discussion, please send us some feedback. Send us an email. .com. That's the best way to get a hold of us and tell us your thoughts on the episode, your most memorable moments of the last 4 years of Star Wars. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
You can also reach out to us on our social media accounts. You can reach us by Facebook at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. Our Twitter account is at EchoBasePodcast. The network Twitter is at Random Chatter. My Twitter is at The Curse of Chris. Lou, what is your Twitter?
It's my name. It's at Lou Secki. That's LOUSECKI.
Tim, what about you?
At Qui-Gon Tim, that's with two M's.
And don't forget, you can find all of our shows at randomchatter.com.
All right. The time has come.
Oh, boy.
We got to talk about spreading the word about Echo Base and throwing us some love. Pronounce as I did last time. Don't worry. But yeah, please go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, wherever it is that you find Echo Base and any of the other Random Chatter podcasts, if you're listening to them. If you're not, please check them out. We have a ton of different podcasts. We have our flagship show, Random Chatter, which talks about a ton of different pop culture-y types of things. We obviously have Echo Base, which is our Star Wars podcast. We have Chordcast, which is music. We've got podcasts on specific TV shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and The Flash and Green Arrow and all sorts of other ones. Lots and lots of interest. Like Chris said, go to randomchatter.com. You'll get to see the whole listing of what we have there. Please leave us some reviews. That's what brings more people to us and spread the word. Tell other people. I actually this week got us two new listeners. So Seth and John, hi. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're still listening at this point in the podcast. A lot of people probably turned it off by now. So, yeah, definitely tell your friends about us. Patreon. Patreon is really important. Look, here's the deal. None of us get paid for this. This is not a, you know, paid gig for us. We like to get some donations. Those donations do not go into our pocket, so we still do not get paid. But there are things that we have to pay for. We got to pay for things like web hosting to keep our website up. We have to pay for things like data storage so we can continue to offer you guys and gals the full archive of all the episodes that we have. That storage space costs money on a regular basis. So we got to be able to pay for things to, you know, keep the lights on and such. The way that we are able to do so is through Patreon. So go to patreon.com/randomchatter. And you can throw any amount of money at us. I believe last episode I said you can throw anywhere between $1 and $1 million. I will actually challenge you guys, someone out there, to throw out $1 million. I think that's pretty reasonable. And by the way, you can do that in monthly installments, or you can just make one lump sum. We're good either way. That's totally fine with us. There will be some updated perks coming with Patreon. We have had different perks associated with different levels, and we're kind of talking internally now about some of the other perks that we can offer for folks. Things that you will get with different levels of donation. But one of the coolest things, and I think it's still going to remain this way, Lou, correct me if I'm wrong, is that even a $1 donation per month will get you into our Slack channel. Is that correct,
Lou? That is correct.
And I will tell you, it's a $1 a month getting into the Slack channel, which is all of Random Chatter. So, you know, you're donating to the Random Chatter network, and that $1 or $1 million, or even we can be reasonable, $100,000. That's cool. you throw that at us, any amount that gets you into Slack. Slack is the most freaking entertaining thing out there, aside from this podcast. All day, every day, you get to interact with other fans of the Random Chatter network of shows from all around the world. We've got folks here in the States. There's a couple of token Canadians, I guess. We've got some folks in England. We have, I think, folks in some other places. We have a fan in Australia. He doesn't show up too often on Slack, but we met him at Celebration. So we've got some folks from all around. And it's great. We get some great discussions. Sometimes they get a little off color. I'm looking at you, Derek. but we have a great time. We talk about some of the different shows. You get to interact with the hosts. You get to basically witness Joel threaten Chris. So
yeah,
if you listen to Cordcast, if you listen to Cordcast, which is our music show, you get to know who Joel is, and she's a wonderful person. I say that because I don't want her to hurt me. So that's what happens. And that's one of the best perks of it. So seriously, you get to talk to all of us. And you know, quite honestly, if someone throws $1 million into this Patreon thing for us, you don't have to hear me go through the spiel for like maybe a couple months. So I think that's a pretty good trade-off. But that's all I got. So, you guys, you know, cue the music, do your thing.
I seriously think that by the end of this month, or at some point, Tim is just going to convince me to donate myself.
Yeah, I'm ready to start shelling out some cash here, yeah.
Well, good. That was a good pitch, Tim.
Thanks, guys. For
that. I thought you said it wasn't even as long-winded, though.
Well,
we got to work on that. I'm just saying.
We'll see what happens next week.
So, last bit of closing here. The music that you hear in this podcast is The Force Theme by Scandroid and The Imperial March by Stealthweller.
Yes, and we were on track for our hour mark, but, you know, Tim put us over there, so we'll blame that on Tim. Tim's fault. Hashtag Tim's fault. But, thanks for listening, guys. Until next week, take care.